In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Yes, let's do it. Let's talk movies. It's Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10. Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Alan Adams of The Main Edge, right here with us in studio. Hello.
Well, hello. How are you?
Wonderful. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you as well.
You had a nice weekend?
I did. Busy, but it was good.
Yeah, you did some improv down in Portland. How did that go?
It was a lot of fun. I was the guest of our good friend Sam Kirkendall, formerly of the Focus Group. He has his own crew down there called Yes and Co., and they did a series of four performances as part of Port Fringe down there, which was over the last 10 days or so. And and he invited me to be their guest for their Friday night show, told a couple of stories, had some fun. And had a great night out on the town down there in Portland. And then we basically hurtled back up the highway on Saturday to be back in time to drink some beer at the Best of the North Festival, which was a delight.
Yeah, sure was. We had a good time there.
And, beyond that, trying to do all the other things that the weekend requires of me in a significantly truncated amount of time.
And that involves going to the movies, and you saw two this weekend. Shall we begin with Child's Play?
I think that's probably the... Now, I don't know who decided that we needed a new Child's Play, but it's interesting because, I'll lead with this. It's better than I thought it was going to be.
Okay, that's good.
It's interesting because one of the things that I've long believed is that you can tell a lot about what this country is going through by watching the horror movies of the time.
I agree completely.
I think it's a really, really strong barometer of where the culture is at on the whole. Because again, like it or not, a lot of our world is defined by what frightens us at a given time. So whether it's the, stuff like your Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Night of the Living Deads, your Doctor Strange loves, Child's Play wasn't really one of those movies because, it's a doll that's possessed by the spirit of an evil murderer. There's not a lot of room for metaphor in there.
No.
Like, that's pretty, pretty basic. But, the world of 2019, very different than the world of 1988. And we have moved from the soul of a deceased evil murderer to a rogue AI. And that's the force that drives our friend Chucky in this incarnation. And it's not terrible. It's got some pretty funny moments. It's legitimately gruesome in places, and they play some of that graphic visceral stuff for laughs, which works for, worked for me. It's not going to work for everybody, but it worked for me. Some of the performances are actually pretty legit. They leaned pretty heavily on practical effects, which I'm always going to applaud, regardless of, maybe not as successful as they had hoped in terms of the general result, but good on them for doing it, because there's no question that practical stuff looks much more tangible when you see it on screen, no matter how good the CGI might be. So the basic gist is we're in Chicago. Young boy named Andy is living with his single mom, Karen, played by Aubrey Plaza, who's great. His birthday's coming up. They've moved to a new place. They're trying to get a fresh start, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, in this world, there's a tech giant called Caslin Industries, whose CEO appears in a number of, sort of video montage moments, played by Tim Matheson.
Friend of Downtown.
That's what I'm saying. we're in the factory. They're creating this doll called Buddy, B-U-D-D-I, that is basically designed to serve as sort of a hub for all your Caslin Industries connected products. So you have this doll that can, you know, control your TV and start your music and, you know, change the thermostat and talk to your refrigerator and all, you know, all this Internet of Things type stuff. It's the sort of supposed to serve as this hub while also being a friend to your child. We get a look inside one of the manufacturing facilities, and one of the workers is berated and fired by his supervisor, and he's told, finish this last one and then get out of here. And so he's like, you know what, screw that guy, and he removes all safety protocols from the sort of AI chip, which, you know, you're watching him like type in stuff, and it's like, and you know, violence protocol removed, and it's like, wait, so there's a violence protocol?
Why?
I mean, that seems like a mistake from the get-go. Yes, yes. That seems like some poor design choices there. Anyway, so he turns off all the safety protocols, so there's nothing, you know, reining in this the artificial intelligence that powers this particular buddy. Andy's mom, it turns out, works at a big box store that's hilariously named Zed Mart, she takes in a return. She works at the returns desk. She takes in a return of a buddy that has been malfunctioning. And so she sort of she takes it home and gives it to her son as an early birthday present. And it becomes clear pretty quickly that that this particular buddy is different than the others. It displays a degree of self-awareness. It does all the things it's not supposed to do, like curse and, you know, engage in sort of, you know, violence against people and animals and whatnot. And just it gets weird. And you would think that the kid would be like, oh, man, I should really talk to somebody about this. Nope. He's just like, yeah, OK, we're going to just go with this as it is. Meanwhile, the mom has a really crappy boyfriend who's kind of a jerk, down the hall, one of their neighbors, the neighbor's son is a Chicago PD detective named Mike, played by Brian Henry Tyree Henry. Sorry. As the relationship between Andy and Chucky develops, things start to take some pretty dark turns, and then it really just goes full on creep show. When Chucky realizes that maybe Andy is starting to pull away, and there's only room for one best friend in Andy's life, and that's a void that Chucky's going to fill, and if he has to like stab some people to make that happen, he's gonna do it. It's really gross in some places. Like there are a couple of really just viscerally unsettling death scenes in this movie. Some of them are, you know, sort of the one-on-one hands-on kind of thing. And others involve Chucky's ability to control the internet because he's, you know, got that connectivity
it's pretty scary.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's something that I think a lot of people have a sense of at least unease about, the idea that that the interconnectedness of you know, all these different devices in our lives, you know, the phone apps and the Internet of Things and all this stuff coming together. The idea that someone or something could take control of that stuff in a way that would be harmful towards us is really kind of scary. And for them to sort of fold that into a movie about a killer doll is... it's unexpectedly effective. We'll put it that way. Plaza's great. The kid who plays Andy is great. Mark Hamill is the voice of Chucky,
right?
And he's a delight. It's such a great choice, and he does such a great job. And there are moments in this movie where I laughed out loud and felt kind of weird about the fact that I had laughed out loud. And then laughed at the fact that I felt weird about laughing about it. And it was just this whole thing. And it's just like, yeah, again, not a great movie. Plenty of flaws. A lot of it doesn't make a lot of sense structurally, tonally. It doesn't always add up. But, I mean, I thought it was going to be hot garbage. And it's a sight better than that.
I'm glad to hear it. We reached out to Tim Matheson. get him back on the show. Can you turn up my mic, Carrie? I can't hear me. Oh, there I go. That's better. We reached out to Tim a while back to see if he wanted to talk about Child's Play. And he emailed right back and said, I think we're going to focus on the new Netflix series that's coming up in the fall. Which made me wonder.
It's fine. I mean, I don't just the nature of the role. I don't know that Tim Matheson was ever in the room with anyone else who's in the movie. Like, it's just like his parts are just like, you know, those sort of promotional videos where it's just him against a white backdrop. Like, he's always appearing on a screen. Like, yeah. He's never like involved in the world of the movie. So it's like, yeah, he probably just, you know, he showed up for, you know, a day and a half and, you know, sat in front of a green screen, read his lines, and then, you know, and peaced out, which good on you. Nice work if you can get it.
All right. The other movie we're talking about this week, I had a chance to see it yesterday as well. One of the more unlikely sequels, Toy Story 4. We all kind of assumed it was over when Andy went off to college and the toys found a new home.
I didn't want a Toy Story 4.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, from the moment I heard that it was happening, I was skeptical. Not because I have any sort of doubt in the abilities of Pixar. Like, the reality is, even their, like, with a couple of exceptions, for the most part, even their not great movies are still really good. Like, it's not like they make a ton of real clunkers. But the truth is, you came to such a wonderful conclusion to that story arc. Like, you really just tied everything up in such a wonderful way and established this wonderful sort of ending that's also a beginning that's, you know, it just fits so beautifully. And it's like, yeah, we could just file this away. We don't need to go back here. And so I see that they're making this sequel, and I'm like, is this it? Is this when they go full you know, total cynical cash grab? Because yeah, they've done it with like Cars and stuff like that, the sort of merchandise money. But you always kind of felt like Toy Story was different because, you know, it was their first movie, and so you felt like they had some sort of real genuine connection, and that Toy Story was always going to be safe. So I walked in with trepidation. You know, I don't know how they did it, but I thought it was great. Mm. I thought it was legitimately great.
Oh yeah.
Like, and like, I didn't feel like it undermined the trilogy that came before. I felt like it told its own sort of story, being respectful of the way the characters had developed in the past, but also allowing for a path forward that was maybe a little bit different than what we would have anticipated. Like, it's a different movie than the original trilogy.
Yeah, well, and what I like about it, without giving too much away, is that three, which I thought was the best of the three, it sort of brought everything full circle, which was great, and that's a nice way to wrap it up with a bow on top. But this one just went in such a different direction with more than one existential crisis.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a brilliant way to go.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way to just sort of, you know, go with the... They explore the big ideas in that sort of uniquely Pixar way. But the joy of this one, I felt, was... they also managed to do the emotional engagement without throwing the full on like gut punch moment. Mm. Like, I mean, and there are some moments, and it will get dusty in the theater, but none of the real like those super hard hitting like, oh my God, I'm a crying mess who has lost all control of myself. Like, there wasn't one of those. I'm a little close there at the end. I'm not gonna go into specifics because, you know, spoilers and whatnot. But yeah, like, you know, you don't want to give too much of the story away, but, you know, Woody and the crew are living with Bonnie now, with the young girl, you know, doing what toys do, getting played with. But Woody has sort of fallen by the wayside a little bit. He's not as high up in the hierarchy as he once was. He's spending more time in the closet, you know, gathering the occasional dust bunny, yes, that sort of thing.
Which is a great bit.
So he takes it upon himself. He's like, well, if I'm not going to get, you know, if I'm not going to be able to help her by playing, I will try to help her by helping to sort of guide her and protect her through these sort of iconic moments of childhood, specifically when she goes to school, when she goes to kindergarten. So he stows away with her in her backpack and all that stuff. And then when they come home after that first day, all the toys discover that there's a new member of their group, a repurposed spork with pipe cleaner arms and popsicle stick feet named Forky, voiced by just an exquisitely cast Tony Hale.
He's perfect.
He's so good. It's remarkable how much how engaging dialogue can be, despite the fact that for the first half hour of the movie, the only word he says is trash. Because he himself is dealing with the existential crisis of having been granted sentience after being turned into a toy, when all he really wants to do is just go in the trash can because he's a used spork, and that's where used sporks go.
Yes, and that whole thing is brilliant as well.
The family goes on a vacation. Forky makes his escape. Woody tries to track him down, and that's when things get pretty complicated because. Along the way, they stumble upon an antique store where Woody encounters old friend Bo Peep, voiced by Annie Potts, who was a very significant part of the first movie, but then sort of, fell by the wayside a little bit. And now we get to learn a little bit about what she's been doing, which is basically existing in a kid-free world, like just basically operating on her own and sort of having a degree of freedom that I don't think we've ever really seen from any of the toys in the sort of Toy Story universe, and it's just that it opens this wonderful door to a whole different sort of realm, one where we have the 50s era talking doll called Gabby Gabby that wants something very important from Woody in order to continue her own journey towards finding a child, commanding her horrifying army of ventriloquist dummies. Meanwhile, Bo Peep still has her sheep. And she has other friends as well, including, it's just the best. The Keanu-sance continues.
Oh, my God.
As the toy version of Canadian Daredevil Duke Kaboom.
He is so good.
He's so good. He's so good. And it's such a weird part. And it's just...
And who has had his own existential crisis.
Exactly. It's like, he's like, why can't I jump as far as the commercial? It's so beautifully done. Meanwhile, because this is how these stories work, Buzz, voiced again by Tim Allen, has to go find Woody, who has left. And so he winds up trapped in a carnival where he encounters the bound at the hand duo of Ducky and Bunny, voiced by Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, who I'm not going to go into the specifics because it's not fair to anybody, but they are at the center of an ongoing bit that might be the funniest thing that I've ever seen in a Toy Story movie.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's so good, and I'm not going to tell you anymore. Just know that it is absolutely hilarious. And, of course, all these toys wind up coming together decide that they're going to do whatever it takes to get Forky back to Bonnie to make her happy. But then, some other decisions are going to have to be made. Big decisions about what's going to happen going forward. And really, isn't that what the Toy Story movies are about? Is making those decisions about going forward and growing up and changing, developing a new path, taking your own path as opposed to the one that's mapped out for you. It's a wonderfully interesting and engaging sort of message underlying the movie, but it's also hilarious.
I think it's the funniest of the four Toy Story films.
Well, I think they really lean into the jokes in a way that I don't think the previous movies ever really did. And I'm not sure if that's just because Toy Story 3 was 10 years ago. It's been a long time, and the climate has changed a little bit. And the folks at Pixar have always proven they're certainly willing and able to evolve when necessary. And so, you wonder if the state of the game has changed to the point where it's like they want to kind of create lean into the jokes a little bit more. But that doesn't change the fact that, the level of engagement with the characters is so strong. Even 10 years later, hearing the Randy Newman song and seeing the toys, interacting with one another. Every once in a while getting a a long lost recorded bit from a Don Rickles or a Jim Varney. You know what I mean? Like just like these this wonderful sort of marriage of the past and the present. In a way that I just didn't think they were going to be able to do it.
And so many little homages, not only to the Toy Story franchise, but almost all of the Pixar films.
Yeah, Pixar's always great about sort of that sort of Easter egg kind of situation. But I don't know that they've ever really thrown themselves into it quite like they do in this one, which is a good thing. Like, I think it's a lot of fun. And the idea that it's once again a movie that engages... both children and adults it works on multiple levels. And one of the things that I loved about this one in particular is I feel like there are more moments in this one where the two levels sort of meet, where it's like, you know, it's like, oh, I'm definitely enjoying this the same way a six-year-old kid would. And that's a rare thing. It's a very difficult, the degree of difficulty is off the charts to do that. And the fact that they're able to do it, a handful of times over the course of this movie, it's really impressive. And again, I don't know that I can think of a better marriage of actor and character than Tom Hanks and Woody, the cowboy. Like, I mean, it's just like, it's so like iconic at this point, just such a perfect match. So good and pure, Well, I'll be the first to admit that Tim Allen is problematic. He's a great Buzz Lightyear.
Oh God,
yeah. You know what I mean. And it's just like you kind of get the impression that because Hanks being a notorious liberal, Allen having his conservative bent, you kind of get the feeling that all that stuff literally gets left outside the studio because you see the two of them together and it's like, I don't understand what's going on here. Like, you guys should hate each other, but you clearly don't. It speaks to the power of the story that I think they're telling. As far as the supporting cast, Key and Peele are phenomenal. Reeves, we mentioned, is great. Annie Potts, Joan Cusack is back.
Christina Hendricks was
Christina
great.
Hendricks is the quote unquote big bad, but I mean, just across the board, it's excellent. Like from the from the big set piece gags to just like a unicorn repeating one particular theory with regards to how they can establish a distraction. I'm not going to blow that one for you either, but it's hysterical.
And don't leave when the credits start.
Nope. You got to hold on. You got to stick around because you're going to get some stuff mid credits and an end credit sequence that is the payoff to a throwaway joke from half an hour into the movie. And it's just a delight. Yeah. Just, I didn't want it. But I'm glad I got it.
I agree. Fantastic. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams, Main Edge Movie Reviews, here on Pass the Popcorn.